people have a tendency to murmur for two reasons. They hope they won't be heard, and they hope they will. In this discussion, Richard explores Numbers 11. It teaches us that if we complain, God will hear it. If you hear people complaining, don't join in. If we do, particularly when it's complaining about what God is doing or not doing, the consequences may be grim. God may be working in ways and through people we just don't know.
Numbers chapter 11. And the people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some outer-lying parts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moshe, and Moshe prayed to the Lord, the fire died down. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept again and said, "Oh, that we had meat to eat! We remember the fish we ate in Mitzrayim that cost nothing, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. And now our strength is dried up, and there is nothing at all but this manna to look at." Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its appearance like that of delium. The people went about and gathered it, and it ground it in handmills, and beat it in mortars, and boiled it in pots, and made cakes out of it. And the taste of it was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. When the dew fell upon the camp in the night, manna fell with it. Moses heard the people weeping about their clans, everyone at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moshe was displeased. Moshe said to the Lord, "Why have you dealt ill with your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight, that you lay the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth, that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom, as a nurse carries a nursing child, to the land that you swore to give their fathers'? Where am I to get meat for all these people? For they weep before me and say, 'Give us meat that we may eat.' And I am not able to carry all these people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once. If I have found favor in your sight, that I may not lose to see my wretchedness." Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Gather for me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people and officers among them, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their stand there with you. And I will come down and talk with you there, and I will take some of the spirit that is on you and put it on them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you may not bear it yourself alone. And say to the people, 'Consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat, for you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, "Who will give us meat to eat? For it is better for us in Egypt." Therefore, the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall not eat just one day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or 10 days, or 20 days, but a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, "Why did we come out of Mitzrayim?" But Moshe said, "The people among whom I number 600,000 on foot, and you have said, 'I will give them meat to eat, that they should eat for a whole month.' Shall flocks and herds be slaughtered for them? And that be enough for them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them? And that be enough for them?" And the Lord said to Moshe, "Is the arm of the Lord shortened? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not." So Moshe went out and told the people the words of the Lord. And he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him, and took some of the spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. And as soon as the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not continue doing it. Now two men remained in the camp, one named Eldad and the other named Medad, and the spirit rested on them. They were among those registered, but they had not gone out to the tent, and so they prophesied in the camp. And the young man ran and told Moshe, "Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp." And Yehoshua, the son of Nun, the assistant to Moshe from his youth, said, "My lord Moshe, stop them." But Moshe said to him, "Are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his spirit on them." And Moshe and the elders of Israel returned to the camp. Then a wind from the Lord sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the ground. And the people rose all that day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. Those who gathered least gathered 10 omers. And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. While the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people. And the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore, the name of that place is called Kibrot Hatava, because there they buried the people who had the craving. From Kibrot Hatava, the people journeyed to Hazarot, and they remained at Hazarot.
So the people are complaining and blaming God for their problems? Is that why they're in a lot of trouble?
Yes, but we'll talk about that in more preciseness. Yeah, the answer is definitely yes. By this time, let me finish your answer question. Deanne, by this time, they know who God is. They know who Yahweh is. It's not like they didn't know him coming out of Egypt. We're talking a year later. These people are fully aware of who the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is. They know that. So it's not basically they did not know. They're now knowing, and so they are complaining, yes, against God himself. Just to answer your question to the fullness, okay?
Okay, so I actually did my homework. Okay, so this is what I got that I found interesting. Okay, I underlined in the process of this outlining parts. Now, the reason why that was interesting to me is because what I tend to forget is that it was more than just the Israelites that left with them.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
We'll definitely talk about that.
Okay, so that was one of the things that I underlined. The other thing I underlined was the word remember.
Uh-huh.
I underlined that because when we look at our past, we tend to remember it differently than what it really was.
What is written is more important here. Yes.
Okay. This is, of course, my homework.
Well, no, you're doing good. You're doing good. You're doing fine.
I wanted to know what belladinium was. Appearance like that of belladinium. Coriander.
Oh, that was a question I was going to ask my wife. She probably knows.
Okay.
I don't know.
I had that underlined.
Or maybe Jeff knows. I forgot to look that word up.
Okay, well, I had that underlined because I've never heard of that word.
Yeah.
Okay. Going down. I underlined the phrase, kill me at once. And the reason I underlined that is because I see Moshe as more of a father figure to the people that he's leading.
Okay.
And if I was in his position as a father figure, although I'm not that right gender, I would rather see myself die before I ever saw my child die.
Oh, I got you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would rather me die before my son dies, because it would kill me if my son died before I did. Does that make sense? It's one of my fears. I also underlined, and I will come down and talk with you there. I was curious, did Abba actually come to their vision?
What verse are you in?
I'm now down at 17. I told you I did my
17, okay, that's fine.
I was curious if Abba actually did make his appearance to them. Actually, appearance. Going down. I'm now at 26. It says two men remained in the camp. It kind of makes me think that kind of like Abba coming to us rather than us having to come to him. And I found it interesting that Eliad and Medad both mean beloved. Beloved. Okay. And I had that underlined, but I don't know why I had that one underlined. And I also had 32 underlined because what I'm learning and trying to eat healthier is that the chickens are getting a lot more food than I really thought that they did. And so if you have so much food come at you at one thing, then it's going to spread disease. It's not like they had the chickens to feed the chickens to the chickens or the quails to the chickens. So it might have caused the plagues because the diseases of the dead animals. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
I had that, which led into the very great plague. Maybe that was the reason for the plague.
All right.
And that was it.
Oh. Is everybody writing these questions down? Yes.
In verse 17, when Yahuwah says, I will come down and talk with you there and take the spirit that is upon you and put it upon them. So the spirit of the Lord that's upon Moshe, this is, wait a minute, I thought this didn't happen until Acts 2:38. I'm being facetious.
Right.
Can you relate that same? Because a lot of people in the Christian world say the Spirit of God didn't really come down until Acts 2:38.
I know, but that's what the world thinks. I don't care what the world thinks. Tell you honest truth.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is, can you talk a little bit about this Spirit in verse 17?
Right. It tells you it's my Spirit.
Right.
His, not some foreigner Spirit. We'll talk more in detail about Spirit a little bit later. Yes.
I also kind of clued in on that segment with Eldad and Medad. And I was thinking more in terms of the jealous reaction of Joshua a little bit. And so his jealousy for the sake of Moses is really what it is. But nonetheless, it's very similar to a story that happened with Yeshua and the 12, is that there is a story where someone was speaking in the name of Yeshua that wasn't among that group.
Amongst them, right.
And the 12 were not too happy about that, and so they told Yeshua that he should rebuke that person and
like
tell him to shut
Moses
up.
Yeah,
and
right.
Yeshua's basic reaction was the
parallel.
Same as Moses.
Yes.
Just let him carry on.
Let him do it.
Let him do it. And so that's what...
Well, what Yeshua said, they're not against me. They're on my side.
Peripheral vision.
What was the question?
The question is, what made Moses complain different than the people's complaint?
Okay.
Because he did.
We will get into that because this chapter is very interesting. There seem to be three separate things going on, not necessarily in precise order or direction. All right? Any more questions? Yeah, one more.
Sorry, just in verse 25 again about the Spirit, and then they prophesied. I mean,
we'll talk about prophecy as well. By the way, this is the first time the word shows up in your Bible, is this place, and this time in association with the 70. Very important to know that. Yes?
There were two things that I noticed. One is, I thought it was actually very interesting that the two men, it says that they were summoned.
They were what?
They were called to come.
To come, right.
But they didn't.
Right.
But God still put his Spirit on them. So
correct.
I thought that was cool because it's kind of like some kind of refusal, but it's worth looking into. The other thing that I noticed is that he brought the quails from the sea.
Yeah.
That's also where he created the birds from in the creation week, was from the water.
Interesting thought. I didn't think of it that way at all. No.
One small little thing. Cheryl had asked a question earlier about Bedellium.
Okay.
And according to the, this is the Brown Driver Briggs definition where they kind of splice and dice everything.
Yes.
It refers to a, quote, odoriferous transparent gum of yellowish color.
Okay. I figured it was yellowish in color, but I didn't know exactly what that word meant. And I didn't get a chance to look it up because I was looking at something else completely in this chapter. I can't spot every jot and tittle. But you have. That's great. If there's no more questions? What? Well, let's start before you come up with more. The first three verses. Now, when you look into it, it seems like, what is the point? What's the issue? Because every commentary I've ever read said, this is not what Moses heard, this is what God heard. Now listen very carefully. Makes sense. When the people complained, it displeased. He didn't like Yahweh. And Yahweh heard it. Didn't say that Moses. Later on, there's another place where Moses, in this chapter, hears a different complaint. So we have to keep this in mind. And along when this is where the fire comes down and he consumes them. That word, it says in some translation, the outermost part of the camp means it wasn't just the outskirts. It wasn't the fringes on the outside. It was from center all the way out to the edges. Doesn't tell you how many people died. All we know is that he killed them. So what's the big issue here with God? Yes.
Not trusting him.
Don't complain.
Well, the root of that is they're not trusting him. If
right.
They don't trust him.
Okay. Look, Jim, maybe you help with that one. Go ahead. Oh, sorry, Jeff.
By them complaining, they're showing that they don't think that God has their best interest at heart.
Basically. But we don't know in the first three verses what they were complaining about. Now, yes, Jeff read a part. It's a possibility. They didn't like their turmoil. They didn't like the conditions. They didn't like what's going on. But they were in a land out of Egypt now. They went to the land of Paran. And now they moved to another location. And now God said something. He heard them say something, so God did this. Now, I will have to tell you, honestly, you know, human beings do have a tendency to murmur and hope they're not heard, as well as murmur, hope that they will be heard. So, but this is the action, or say this is God's, quote, justice being instituted. The judgment was, you complain, I'm going to kill you. That's my judgment. Justice has been done, you're dead. It's a simplicity of that, right? Because they were already instructed for 1 year solid about all the things that Moses was told upon the mountain. And Moses came down and taught the people what God said to him on the mountain. And the elders, remember, they were all listed, carefully listed. God picked those elders to lead. Now, in these later on, it's in this chapter, he didn't pick the 70. All right? Fascinating thought. So we go through here, and a lot of people have this idea that the chapter really is complaining about the murmuring that took place for the multitude. We'll talk about that. Because Jeff has he didn't say that. You remember what Jeff said when he read that verse? You don't remember. The multitude is not necessarily the foreigners. The foreigners. They were what? What were they demanding? Tells you exactly what they were demanding. They wanted to go back to Egypt. And that very verse tells you that Israel said, why can't we go back to Israel? Why can't we go back to Egypt where all that wonderful food is at? Do you think it was just the innocent multitude, the rebellious ones, the anti-Israeli people out there? No. Could they be influenced by? Of course they can be. In my thinking, and only my thinking, the mixed multitude, as it says there, is in cahoots with or adjoined with what Israel was complaining about. You understand what I'm saying? This was not stirred up by the mixed multitude in that phrase, mixed multitude. The mixed multitude went along with what Israel was complaining about, because that very same verse tells you what Israel was complaining about. Not what the mixed multitude were complaining about. So it's easy to blame the mixed multitude. And I read an awful lot of commentaries on Jewish things. See, all the multitude, those people who are not part of Israel, will cause this thing. Well, that's not exactly what it says, because Israel was complaining. So you understand what I'm saying there? We have to look at it carefully how it is written, and be careful not to blame the other guy. These people were called out of Egypt. Even those who are not Israelites went with them. Why? Because they didn't like Israelites. They didn't like Jews. They didn't like Ephraimites. They despised and hated the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Listen, for one solid year, that, quote, mixed multitude heard the very same thing all of the house of Israel heard, including a stranger who dwells with you, the same will apply to him as to you. Therefore, welcome him in. These were not a bunch of rebellious people. Yes, we're going to find later on, there's one particular one of this rebellious one. It happened to be a mixed multitude for him. But actually, he really was born. His mother was of the house of Israel. He has, quote, the blood of Israel in him, quote, in a quote. If you want to look at it from that point of view. What I'm saying to you, when we read these things, be careful, because it's human nature. Say, well, you know, I was taught that. It's their fault. No. So what? Now you're in the world of truth. They're in the world of loss. They don't know that. They don't, like Jonah, they don't know their right hand from their left hand. They don't know what's going on. Now, these mixed, quote, multitude, they did know what was going on. Doesn't say all the mixed multitude. No, it's just mixed multitude. So not every one of them were complaining, and all of the house of Israel, but not every one of them were complaining. Otherwise, the house of Israel would be dead. All of them would be dead. So don't join them into a big who's cluster of what Moses said, 600,000 dead. No, God didn't kill them. Did he kill some of them? Yes, he did. But this particular first three verses, it says God heard. That's different than Moses heard and God heard. This is what Moses didn't hear. And every commentary I read is this is something that is unknown of what they were murmuring about, or what they were actually complaining about. Now try to put in your mind, these people were stayed at Mount Sinai for almost one solid year. Yes?
I was just sitting here as we're talking about the first verse here about the Lord hearing the complaint, the murmuring. Back in Genesis 15, 13 and 14, he talks about the promise that surely they will go in and spend 400 years, but they will come out.
Right.
So could this be in God's own heart, hearing this murmuring, complaining, you're going and opposing the promise, what I said, I've brought you out.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know. All the companies say, well, it could be because of the bad conditions having to travel. Or it could be because, well, they have the birds gone, they didn't have enough food to eat. Or it could be because they just didn't like what God was doing. Or it could be they're just complaining for the sake of complaining because they're all complainers. I've heard every commentary under the sun, including Jewish and Christian and everybody else. They don't have an answer. So I have to say, I don't know what it was. I can, quote, think what it could be. Or I can say what I think it's going to be, but I can't because it's not written. All right? Does it make sense to you? If it's not written, I'm not going to speculate. Yes.
I was just thinking, and of course, this is just one option. But, you know, if we just read it right there, just on surface, you know, surface value, it says they're complaining, but it doesn't say they're going to God. And then Moses actually goes to God.
No, not here. Later, another issue comes up. Then Moses goes to God. So we have to look at the first issue here of complaints. The very first thing of chapter 11 is all about complaining, murmuring, including Moses. Complaining against God, saying, I can't do this. What are you doing this to me for? So it's a chapter of, God, what are you doing? But these people didn't have the same attitude that Moses had when he wanted to complain. Yes.
According to recent studies that I've done with you, Richard, over the past many years I've been with you, to me, God has had a lot of patience up to now, because according to my notes, this is the eighth murmur. And the one down below in verse 5 is the ninth. And there's 10 altogether. There's 10 murmurs.
Yeah, the 10th one was, you didn't enter the promised land. Ah, no more. That's it.
Yeah, it's in Numbers 14.
Yeah. So, we're not in Numbers 14, but yes, I understand what you're saying. But, you know, it's very fascinating to see, and of course, 10 is a very important number with God, but that's later on in chapter 14. Yeah. God willing, we'll get there, not today, but sometime in the future. Do you understand so far what I am trying to say to you on the first three verses? Now, let's go to verse number 4. What does verse number 4? This is the one we talk about the mixed multitude. Among them felt a lusting, and the children of Israel also. It doesn't say weep. Wailing is the proper word. Again. Do you see that word again? So whatever they were wailing about in verse 1, 2, and 3, they're wailing now again, and guess who heard it? Now let's listen. And said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Now Moses heard this part. Let's continue on. We remember the fish and remember the wonderful food that was freely easy to get a hold of in Egypt. It's not easy to get it here, is it? It's downright difficult. We're in the middle of a desert or a barren place that has nothing there to eat. Other than what? Manna. And of course, it goes through this thing and it's a really unusual thing. I'm not going to go through all that. And the other one about the color was answered by Tammy, and thank you very much for that. And they could make it any way they want, boil it, cook it, fry it, whatever you want to do. But it was a taste of a fresh oil. Oily stuff. It was oily. Interesting. And it tells you how it came. Now, verse 10, still part of this whole subject matter. Heard the people, and it says weep, it should be reading, heard the people wailing throughout their families, every man at his door of his tent, and the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against them, just like it was in verse 1, 2, 3. Now the fire is on. All right? And Moses turned now, and he's heard those bad things. He didn't like it. He said Moses was displeased. A lot of part of that word, Moses was displeased. Did you notice that in verse 1? That is, the Lord was displeased. Now we have here where Moses now displeased. And what did Moses hear? We didn't get to have, where's that wonderful food that we were easy to get to? And it wasn't that much work to go out and pick and get the food you want. What happened? Well, they murmured and Moses heard it. And it displeased him. By the way, that Hebrew word for displeased is the same word that is for the other one. He heard bad hearing. The hearing he heard was bad. That's basically what the simplicity of that word displeased doesn't think. Oh, you know, I'm sorry that you said that. I'm not displeased what you said. No, what you're saying is downright bad. Stop it! You're complaining again. Stop it. Now Moses heard it. This time, what did Moses say? Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? Oh, this time God wanted Moses to hear the bad sayings, hearing the bad words. What were the bad words? No fish, no onions, no garlic, no what? Are those bad things? They're complaining things. When you complain, it's a bad thing, bad hearing. That's the simplicity of this entire, when you see what is written. What was heard was displeasing, not just upset. God was so upset, Hanging was burned like fire. Yes.
What just flashed to my mind was the scripture that says, be always in prayer with supplication and thankfulness.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thankful.
Yes. That's what, yes, go ahead.
It's almost kind of an oxymoron here. They're complaining, and now Moses in verse 11 is complaining.
Yes! To you, well, this 11th chapter is about complaining. All right? First we hear, quote, the people complaining, and God heard it, therefore he did this. Now the second one is, he heard this, quote, mixed multitude, along with the rest of the house of Israel complaining because they don't have all that wonderful food that was, you know, go to a restaurant, you order this, you got all wonderful food, you eat your favorite dinner, you get to make it the way you want to make it to flavor your mouth. Oh, it's beautiful tasting. Oh, I love that wine. Look at the age, beautiful wine. Or, but you know, that's a really good glass, that glass of water tasted really nice today. That's complaining when you don't have it. In our world, in our life, in our house, in our home, what happens if God takes all that luxury away from us? Now, according to prophecy, the house of Israel, the luxury will be taken away. Then he's going to hear. Not Moses is not going to hear it, because Moses is dead. He will hear. Woe be unto us if we complain we don't have that wonderful steak cooked the way we want it, when there is no steak. All right? And so, Apostle Paul said that in Corinthians. I mean, Corinthians? I think it was Corinthians anyway. That it's there written for our admonition, for our understanding. You know what God did then? Pay attention. He's the same God yesterday and today and tomorrow. Not push fear into you, right? But I don't think anybody in this room is afraid of God. You know you are blessed by God and you love God and you care about what he's thinking. And you may hear your, quote, mixed multitude out there, quote, that may start murmuring, complaining. Don't join it. Don't join it. Because not all Israelites were joined. Let's continue on with Moses here for a minute. Because he said now, and he says, have I conceived all these people? He was complaining to God, right? Sounds like it. Well, it sounds like to me. And it really is. But he's not addressing God of what? He's not addressing a God of what he does not have. He's addressing God of the job God gave him, and he cannot do it. That's different. That is a different situation, right? Quite radically different. He wasn't longing for that delicious fish dinner. He wasn't longing for that wonderful, because when he was left there at the age of 40, he had all that wonderful food. He knew what it was all about. He knew how gorgeous the food was, because it's a land of wealth, a land of money, a land of prosperity beyond measure. But what did he say to him? I can't do this. How can I give these people flesh? They whine. They complain. They murmur to Moses now, because that's who they are addressing. Moses heard it because that was who they were addressing here in verse 4 onward. Now God was angry, but here Moses was displeased. Now he goes on and he says, now let's drop down here. He says, I'm not able to bear this entire thing. And he said to me, he said to God, if you deal this way with me, if you keep this burden upon me that I am unable to perform and carry, would you just please take my life and get it over with? His mind was not on the people. His mind was on the function that God put him under, the burden God put him under. He'd been on there for a whole year, teaching and guiding these people, did on what the Lord said, and everything he knew how. And guess what happened? It was too much. Yes?
In the beginning, you started talking about how, you know, you're retired and you're at home alone. Well, not home alone, but I mean, you have a lot more time on your hand. You think of yourself a lot more.
Oh, correct, yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, so in Moses' case, now what made that different, too, was Moses was once, you know, looking at self. And
right, he wasn't looking inside. He was looking at himself. He would. That's. I mean, Moses was a human being.
Is he feeling sorry for himself? That's the point. I mean, is it?
Well, we'll find out because God answers him.
Yes,
but he didn't answer the complaining Israelites.
So it's okay if we say, "Oh Lord, I just can't bear this issue right now anymore." It's okay if, as long as we are saying. Well,
okay, to make that statement real simple and short to you. In the book of Revelations, one of the church, he says, I will put no more bearing on you. Period. God knows the limit of a group. He also knows the limit of an individual. Let God make that decision. And I would say, don't complain that God has given you something that you cannot bear. Because he also said, he does not give you anything you cannot bear. Now, the case with Moses, it was more than he can bear. But how did God answer it? How did he take care of it? 70. Which Moses had to pick out and not God. Did you notice that? Let's go on. It's very important. Because after 1 year in Mount Sinai, Moses got to know who's who. Who's a decent person? Who is not a decent? Who would hear the word of the Lord and who would not hear the word of the Lord? Who would teach the people? Who would not teach the people? And so God said, Moses, you pick them out. All right? So he did. Much like the Apostle Paul, he and Barnabas, what did they do? They were the ones responsible to lay hands upon an elder to handle what was right. And they didn't lay their hands on somebody who was a novice. One who loves God, cares about God, and cares about the people. Not to lord it over them with dictatorship, with authority. These 70 men, you won't hear their names. They're unknown. But What did God give them? We'll talk about that. He gave him the spirit that was same, that same spirit that was in Moses. He gave that same spirit into the 70. And we read later on, it is my spirit that I have given. Much like it is in the book of Acts. His spirit was given to 180 people. Did you know that in that spirit of God was given to the 120 people, there were women there too? So God is no respecter whether you're male or female. I want to throw that in there. And so verse 16, God says, okay, gather 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you, Moses, knows to be the elders of the people and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle of Moed. So he, in time, was to bring them to the tabernacle of appointments. Now, it's true that Moses had to pick them out, but then God appointed them. But they had to go to his place of appointment. Right? Now, we know the story continues on, but let's go to something about the Spirit. Let's continue on here. Verse 16, and say unto the people, that is those 70, the ones you pick out, who are going to come to the tabernacle of Moed, you say unto them, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, so it could be the next day, and ye shall eat flesh. Oh, no, this is for the whole people. I'm sorry, this is for everybody, people. I'm sorry, not the all the people. I'm sorry about that one. And ye, for ye have bewailed, complained, bickered against Yahweh. In the ears of Yahweh. God heard it. But also Moses was told to hear it. He heard it. Now Moses says, this ain't not working, God. I need help. And then it talks about this thing that you're going to have it for a whole month. It's interesting to pay attention. This is my thinking. My thinking, and only my thinking. When they left the house, when they left Mount Sinai, they were there from the third month of the first year when they left Egypt. And they were not to depart until somewhere in the middle of the second month in the second year, or toward the end of the second month of second year. Somewhere in that vicinity. How long they stayed doesn't matter. But now we're entering into a very interesting time. And I often wondered, did all this murmuring took place in verse 1, 2, and 3 happen during the third month? That's just an idea. It's just a thought, my brain. Doesn't mean anything. But they were given not just the Ten Commandments. They were given the blessings of how to live. How to get when you're clean, how to get unclean. They were taught what is not holy, what is holy. They're taught when you're going to the promised land, this is how you clean your house. Find the priest and he'll make the decision this way or that way. And let it go. Then he talks about even the clothes, you know, the linen and the cotton. I mean, the linen and the leather. And many other things he talked about. How long should a woman remain? He tells you how long. It's not a curse, it's a point of what caused cleanliness. Then he goes into loving your neighbor as yourself. Oh, wow. Then it goes into Yom Kippurim. Wow. How do you, I'm going to eliminate them all, he says. So they all that understanding they were given, all that knowledge they were given to them. Now they're here. and they're complaining. It's like, boy, don't you remember what it was like a year ago? What was your life like a year ago? Yes.
I can't assume that they'd be any more different than nothing new under the sun. Our generation, just because you learn a whole lot of knowledge, putting it into practice and staying faithful to it is another thing.
Yeah. So we're looking at this thing. Well, I was like the whole month eating nothing but that quail. Okay. Anyway, later on it says this. And then Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen. And he's turned to God and says, how am I going to feed them? What am I supposed to do? Kill off all the flock, kill off all the herd, or go down to the sea and fish and get as many fish as I can? Was that enough for them? I mean, would you say it was a complaint? He wasn't complaining for himself. He's complaining because these people are complaining against Moses. When every leadership there is, no matter if it's political or whether it's business or whether it's anything under the sun, who is in charge? What did one of the presidents say? The buck stops here. Now, he's the only one that said that. The rest of them said, no, no, go on, pass it, pass it to somebody else. Pass it to Justice Barber, no, pass it to the, you know, somebody else. I'm not going to take responsibility for that stuff. It doesn't stop here. Keep on going someplace else. But.
I inherited this mess.
That was a brilliant statement, that man who had a foul mouth, but a lot of wisdom inside that old man who was not really a politician worth beans. At all. It was Harry Truman, I'll be honest with you. Anyway, then he goes on down. And Moses saying to this thing, and then verse 23, very fascinating word. And Yahweh said to Moses, almost like you hear this volume going up. Almost hear the volume of God just really yelling at him. Now, he said, what? Do you think I can't do this? Thou, Moses, shall see now whether my word shall come to pass unto you, Moses, or not. So this is a personal approach here, right? Do you think Moses was doubting? He was trying to figure out how to do this thing that God was putting on his shoulders to do. And he said, wait a minute, I'm giving you 70 men. They're going to do this. They're going to be so. You pick them out. I'm going to do this for them. I'm going to give them something very special. And later on, of course, you read in this chapter what it is. And so, of course, what did Moses do? See, God was talking to Moses during the entire time. He wasn't talking to the public. So Moses went out and told the people the words of Yahweh and gathered the 70 men of the elders of Israel and set them around about the tabernacle, with the exception of two didn't show up. Right? And Yahweh came down in a cloud. Cloud, very fascinating thing. One day I'm going to go into that more explanation if God grants me that. And speak unto him, meaning Moses, and took the spirit that was on Moses and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that the Spirit rested upon them, and they prophesied. And it says, they did not cease. What that means is, once they were prophesying, or not prophesying, they became prophets, in a sense. That was their assignment. That was their moad. That was their now responsibility. What's the main thing a prophet does? Huh? Warns. What else do you do? Sorry, what? Speaks the word of Elohim. And by the way, the word of Elohim is not always bad. It's also a great blessing. These men were able, a prophet will tell you hope as well as the curse of God. And the prophet will tell you, you need to change your way of thinking, your way of mind. How? Now, these guys did not know exactly fully until they received the Spirit of the Creator of heaven and earth in them and on them in order to perform the function of a prophet. This is the first time that word shows up. So we talk about prophecy and we talk about spirit. And because we can jump real quickly to the, what was chapter, was it 15, 14, something like that? Where is that at? Nope. That's that. 25. Nope. Where is that? Where is that? I lost it already. I'm trying to look where it said, my spirit. I just lost that verse somewhere in there. Oh, verse 29. After, okay, these men were given Moed. He said, Moses said something when the others, quote, two, didn't show up at the Moed. But they still had assignment to do. It doesn't tell you why they did not go, or doesn't tell you why they could not go. We don't know, and according to the Word of God, it's none of our business. Only God's. But Moses picked out these 70. And because Moses picked out these 70, God appointed them, the 70, an assignment. Yes, two of them were not at the Moed, the camp of Moed, or the tent of Moed. But Longsome's here, and they were to do this. And so we have a thing, and it says, I put, now listen to what Moses said, and Elohim, verse 29, or God, okay, shall all Yahshua's people were prophets, and that Yahuwah would put his spirit upon them. It's not an evil spirit, it's not a corrupt spirit. Is the spirit of the Creator of heaven and God unclean or holy? Keep that in mind. That's very important to keep that in mind. And of course, I'll go over a few of those things in a minute. Okay, let's 3 o'clock. I don't want to spend too much more time on this. But you all kind of understand what I'm talking about, right? It's not that difficult, right? But another statement? Oh, here we go.
Yeah, it certainly would have made Moses' job much easier if they all had God's spirit on them.
Yes.
Because he's complaining and he's burdened by how hard it is. But if everybody had God's spirit on them, things wouldn't have been perfect, but it certainly would have been much easier.
He wouldn't have such a big job anymore. However, that's not how God works. Okay. And then, of course, he said, verse 30, he says, and Moses returned him into the camp, and he and the elders of Israel returned back into where they were. Once they've gotten this, quote, Spirit of God, quote, and a prophecy coming from God, for God's the one that reveals prophecy. We know that there are times in the past where there are prophets of Balaam. We also know that there are prophets of those who say they are the prophets of the Creator of heaven and earth, Creator of, prophets of God, prophets of Yahweh. And God says, I never sent them. He even warned that that was going to happen and said he would do that in the book of Deuteronomy. All right, I will send one who is so convincing that if you hear him and what he says actually comes to pass, but he says, this God taught me, what are you supposed to do? Stoning. Even if it comes to pass. Wow. And we also know from what's written in the Tanakh that people, he says there, some people have dreams and visions, but they didn't get it from me. And they say they got it from Yahweh. I didn't give them anything. It's in their own imagination. Don't listen to them. Over and over again, we know it says in all of Tanakh, be careful of those who say they come in my name and say this. And even the Son of God said the very same thing. Look, there are people who come in my name saying things, and they will say they are the prophets, and they heard this from the Son of God. Don't believe it. Those are big things, don't you? So we, in our own world, God is putting it upon us to pay attention to Devarim Elohim and nobody else. You know that, Tux, for me personally, takes a lot of work. I've got several pages here of what the prophets and how they lie. And those who claim they have the Spirit of God in them and how they lie. And you have to be careful. What did Jesus say? You will know them by what they are doing. Right? And so if they start saying one thing, the Lord told me this, and they are doing something else other than what is written, for the Son of God said, it is written, it is written, it is written. If they say, well, the Spirit of God came upon me and he gave me a big vision. If it's not written, this is my warning. Don't pay attention to it. Cast it aside. I'm being upfront with you on that, okay? Anyway, in verse 31, he talked about this, the quail that came. It's pretty interesting there. In verse 31, 30, very fascinating. When I read, I highlighted this way. It says, they were, and he read it, a day's journey on this side, and a day, you know how long it takes to walk in those days? 15 minutes, 20 minutes? That's a day's journey. We're talking, 1 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to keep walk until 6 o'clock. How far could you go in that period of time? These were very healthy people, by the way. They weren't thumbing a ride from a taxi. They weren't flying. They weren't looking for somebody to share a ride with. They walked. That's a long distance, don't you think? On this side and that side. And it says very funny about this thing. And it says all around. That's what basic saying. All around, no matter which direction you're going. It's on all. By the way, how many sides are there? How many sides are there? Four! Right. You got it. So four sides. There are four sides to the tabernacle of Moed. Does not tell you that in the 10th chapter? The chapter before? All right. And of course, the least they gathered was 10 Omars. And guess what happened while they're reading it? Something took place. It says something took... I'm sorry, what?
What's 2 cubits high?
I think it'd be closer to about 16, 18 inches high off the ground. He read that today. About 2 feet. It's like a hand span. You hear there?
3 feet deep was the
square. Well, that's an English terminology, but not in Hebrew terminology. It's probably what they call a... What do they call that measurement? A yard or guard, right off hand, I can't remember it, but basically 18 inches, and might have been two of them at 18 inches. That would give you, one is typically 18 inches, a cubic is 18 inches long, so you have two of them, you're up there, something like that. That doesn't make much difference, it's 2 cubics, and 2 cubics to me is 18 times two. 18 times 2, that's how high the quail were off the ground. So they weren't flying away up high. They weren't flying away. They're right there to get. Do you catch them? Quote, midair. Yes.
One thing that I just thought was rather interesting.
thing is they were given instructions with the manna to collect exactly what they needed and to collect the double portion on the Eve.
All right, yeah.
Well, they didn't do that with the birds.
Every day they got it. Not for one day, not for 2 days, not for a week, not for 10, not even but for a whole month. Yes. It doesn't say that.
But yeah.
Yeah, but. Remember, these guys were complaining. They were complaining because they didn't have the kind of delicious food they once used to have. Well, that's what happened. Now, it says here that it was the wrath of Yahweh was kindled against them, and Yahweh smote the people with a very great plague. Now, we could say, well, he caused the quail to be polluted. No, it's just a plague, a disease, a curse. Basically, he gave them a curse. Okay? It doesn't say, well, maybe it does say, how many of them died, did it say? One of them does say in one of these areas there were so many people died. But, and the name of the place was what? Verse 34. What? Literally translated in English, make it as simple as possible. That really means what? Graves of lust. So there was death there that took place. And so they had to bury people. Doesn't say how many of them, but all they saw was graves. They had to dig a hole and bury them. Doesn't say how many, or doesn't say how many. I missed that one. No. And that's the end of the chapter. What do you think? What do you think? What's being read? So this chapter is about complaints, right? Now we've got to find out what the 12th chapter says, right?
Right now?
No. Yes.
So that aspect, though, where he's putting his spirit, and we know, according to Jeremiah 31 and Ezekiel, it's going to cause them to do what his will is.
Okay, fascinating subject. Now, in the time of a man by the name of Saul, King Saul, God put his spirit in him to do just differently than we would think. And he also put an evil, says God put an evil spirit also later on in Saul. And that evil spirit was to kill, huh? Correct. Does he put an evil spirit? Didn't say my spirit. But when he told Saul, I'm going to give you my spirit, and he prophesied for a while, and people were stunned. How can the king be a prophet? Because he says, I'm going to change your entire approach, whether you want to or not. Yes.
But God put the evil spirit in him too.
Yeah. Later. Correct. Well, that's the reason why Saul had both. First time, God said, I'm putting my spirit in you, and you're going to high places. What? And he did. And the next time, I'm going to put an evil spirit in you, and he went out to kill David. Unsuccessful in doing it, but he went out to kill David, unsuccessful. For David's sake, not for Saul's sake. But that's another story that's not important right now. Yes?
Now the question would be, did Saul know that God had taken his spirit away and that God had given him an evil spirit?
Yes, because it so says. God says, speaking to Saul, unto you, I will give you my spirit. So he knew that. On the other one about the evil one, he didn't say, Saul, I'm going to give you this one. God just gave it to him.
And when we are not in God's spirit, and especially if our behavior is contrary to his spirit, we know that's not his spirit. That's something else.
Okay. Let's move on. We're getting off into the subject matter. Sidewind here, please. Even when God gives his spirit unto one of us, and we know we have it, but if we speak contrary to his spirit, what do you think he's going to do? The same thing he did to Saul, for us to understand that's how he operates. God operates. If you don't do it in my name, with my words, with my thought, with my action, but you say you're going to do it in another action, gone. How, even David said, do not take your spirit away from me. We think that once we have God's spirit, it can never be taken. Why? May God not have the power to take away his spirit from us? Of course he does. Scripture's all over the place says he can do that. Yes.
As I was telling you earlier, I did the new moon by myself because I spent the new moon actually with
my mom. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, when I was doing the new moon from 10 o'clock to midnight, because that's how long it took, believe it or not.
That's okay.
You know, there's actually somebody in my neighborhood that also blew a shofar, and I didn't even know that there was anybody. That was just... as soon as I blew mine, somebody else's went off, and I'm... Anyway, that's another story. When I was writing out my petitions, because I tend to think better when I'm writing.
Well, that's great.
Okay, well, that's how I do my homework. anyway, when I was writing them out, it flashed that if you're going to ask anything of me, you need to focus on my promises and ask your requests around my promises.
Always. Yeah, that's good. Okay. If there are no more...
We also got to remember the words of the Messiah. Who the Father has given to me, no one can snatch him from my hand.
Correct.
He will leave the 99 for the one. So even if we are disobeying his spirit, he will chastise.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what the book of the Tanakh says.
No, but you're saying that can God's spirit leave you and forsake you? He says, I will never leave you or forsake you.
If you hear what he is saying, that's what the whole thing is about. There is no stipulation. Well, Ashwas down there, well, Messiah said that. However, even if you turn evil and do wicked things and kill people and rape people, God will never take away his spirit. That's not there in the asterisk on the bar. Word of God. He's talking about you. God can protect you and hold on to you. You can fail in the glory of God. You can fail and fall short of the glory of God. But... if your heart is contrary, I will take away the lamp. I will take away the light. And I'll put somebody else there. That's a serious statement coming from the Son of God. Very serious. And we think, oh, well, don't sweat that one, do we? Oh, no. We're under the authority, if I can use that terminology, jurisdiction, if I want to use that terminology, of the Son of God. And he's standing there amongst the seven candlesticks. And he said, repent. If you don't, the very first one he said, the very first one he talked about, full of knowledge, full of understanding, full of this, but you're missing something very vital. I'm going to remove you. If you don't, return back to the very first love you ever had with me. And with my Father. I will remove it. I never say, I never will tell anybody, and I will tell you publicly, once saved, always saved, I don't find that written anywhere in the Word of God. Nor do I cite the words, once God's Spirit is in you, it will there forever. No, God could do what he wants to do. He has the power to remove his Spirit when he wants to. That's his authority, his jurisdiction, and he is what? Almighty. He can withdraw life from anybody. You understand what I'm saying? I never will ever take God for granted on that. Just because he gave me his spirit doesn't mean, by the way, like Saul, I'll take it away. What? No. And David said, please don't take your spirit away. Was he thinking, oh, just a lot of words? No, he knew that God could do that and would do that. And we say, well, no, that's not what the Son of God said. No, Son of God is saying what his Father said, but there's no little asterisk there, down a little note, fine print. And even if you duel against him and hate him, despise him, and have nothing to do with him, because the book of Hebrews says something very serious, right? Once you have tasted this and turn against it, there is no hope. He's not talking about people who never heard the word of God or never have the Spirit of God in them. Hebrews says, you have it. Don't go against it. You're as good as non-existence. So I don't sign that in the New Testament. That little asterisk doesn't occur there where Yahshua was talking about, but it's very loud and shouty and big, bold statements in my mind in the book of Hebrews. He can do it. All right. Any more statements or thoughts?
Well, I think just to close out, kind of, just so that you and John aren't talking past each other on this, what you do see is that the Messiah is clarifying what ended up being a you'd say an overinterpretation of what you see in the Tanakh, that basically, as it was put by a Puritan, that you are, you know, in the hands of an angry God, quoting from Hebrews. Basically, that you never know at what moment God may, you know, wake up on the wrong side of the bed and decide to cast you into outer darkness. What Messiah is clarifying, and, you know, you see emblems of some of that in some of the rabbinical writings of the time period, is that, you know, if you didn't jump over this and this and this and this hurdle, that, you know, God was going to decide that you didn't use the right, you know, handshake or the right key lock and decide to toss you out of the kingdom. So one of the clarifications that Messiah, you know, given everything that you see in the Tanakh and everything like that, is that if you are in following God's will, he's not just going to wantonly throw you out.
That's correct.
Because he's had a bad day. Because, you know, he states what his character is and what his love is like and his love for mankind is like. And he's not just going to wantonly just because. Because that was a big thing throughout pagan history, is that you had no idea if the particular deity of a time period was going to have a bad day and decide to throw lightning bolts or whatever, floods, hail, fire, whatever, down upon you and destroy you. Now, that was quite different with the God of Israel, is that he puts down, he says, okay, this is my testimony, and that is who I am. So don't somebody else try to come along and say, okay, he said that, but then you also have to do that, 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 that. And if you don't do it all, da, 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 then he's going to throw you out of the kingdom. You know, maybe on one day, if you follow this guy's idea of that and this other guy's idea on that, Messiah comes along and says, no, if you follow and live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, you are following his will.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one, no rabbi here or rabbi there, or somebody's ruling here or somebody's ruling there, is going to throw you out of the kingdom.
If you fall short of every word, if you fall short of every word, or fall short of the words, God does not seem to look at hold that against you. It's when you deliberately go against it. That's different. Once you've tasted the blessedness and reject it, that's what Hebrews is saying to you. I'm not saying that I understand everything under the sun, because I don't. But I only say what I see written. And I take it, my personal life, I take it very, very seriously. I will never fulfill anything to the glory of God. I'll always fall short more than I can even imagine and count and know of. But God doesn't look at that. And what Jeff was saying, if I am trying to do my very best, so that by every word of God that's written, even what is said by his son and what is said by his apostles, what is said by his prophets, what is said by the writings, if I do my very best, that's what he's after. Okay? That's it? Oh. No. You want to say something?
I just had a late-breaking thought. I think maybe the line of demarcation between the two kinds of people, you know, that person that God will remove his spirit or, you know, not, it's going to look like, underneath all of it, the difference between humility and pride. There's the prideful hard heart and the soft, humble heart.
That's true. But that judgment is based upon the Son of God and not upon what I think. I'm only reading what the Son of God has put there for me to read. That's it. I don't know much beyond that point. I'm a very simple person. I don't really go into really complex things. It's kind of like boring to me. I can't keep it up.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hillel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hillel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info. Hillel.info.